Bible Interact is a group of Bible scholars and biblical archaeologists who promote the Hebraic nature of Scripture and view the two Testaments as one unified message. They explain how they use a first century approach to searching the Scriptures, and they share their methods and discoveries for discussion and dialogue. They invite your comments and participation on BibleInteract.tv, where you can also find more teachings, self-study quizzes, webinars, and interviews.
Hello and welcome to Bible Interact Presents. I'm Christy Anderson. Last time we left off covering the central message of the book of Hebrews, and we were focusing on chapters 7 through 10, and we were just getting through the various examples of first and second that were used. There are 9 of them in this section of the book of Hebrews, and how they're culminating in the body of Messiah and really showing us not only why Messiah had to die, but how he is fulfilling the role as high priest in the heavenly tabernacles and why that was necessary, why we had this faulty priesthood that was faulty because of death. It could not enter the heavenly place to make atonement on our behalf, and so we needed a different kind of high priest, one that could overcome death. And so we last ended, we didn't quite have time to finish this first teaching, so I'm going to wrap it up and then we'll go into part 2 of the book of Hebrews as we continue through. We're going to continue through the book of Hebrews and just see how far we can get each time. And so as we go through this, I'm going to come back to chapter 10, verse 9, where we had ended quickly, and we saw that in chapter 10, verse 9, it said, "Then he said, Behold, I have come to do your will. He puts to death or destroys or kills or takes away the first," the Messiah's perishable body, in other words, "in order to establish the second," his imperishable life-giving body. And we know that this is the referent because it then says, "By this we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Messiah Yeshua once for all." So we know that that's the referent. We also know it's the referent based on the fact that it changes in all the other 8 occurrences of first and second in these metaphors that have been building. If you want to go to my website at foritiswritten.com, again, that's foritiswritten.com. You can listen to the first teaching on this series, and you'll be able to catch up to what we're talking about. But in other words, he established these 9 first and seconds, and he's going to switch and use the neuter form of first here in order to establish the second in the neuter form of these words, which is really significant because it's going to show us, and I'll give you a little more detail on this here in a second, but it's going to demonstrate that this is talking about a person. And in a real powerful way here. And it gives us that in the regular context because it says, "By this we have been sanctified or set apart through the offering of the body of Messiah, Yeshua once for all." So we know we're talking about the offering of the body of Messiah. Through the first, though, his perishable body that is being destroyed or put to death in order to establish the second, a life-giving tabernacle, a veil, all of these terms that are torn open, if you will, the veil being his body. And so we see these terms and it allows us to enter the Holy of Holies, which is, as we've seen, we were told by the book of by the author in one of these instances back in, I believe it was chapter 8, that the holy place and the Holy of Holies that he's referring to, symbolically, he's talking about the age, the present age, and the age to come. How are we going to get to the age to come? How are we going to enter the age to come alive, if you will, rather than dead? So he's making this point of how we enter there because Messiah entered there and he was able to overcome death, and he's giving us these reasons that are now culminating this. And we'll see how in 1 Corinthians 15, 42 through 46, Paul makes a similar allusion. So let me go back and I'm going to see where I left off here, and I'm going to continue. I want to mention real quickly the issue of an offering of a korban and how we saw that there, if you have an animal sacrifice, there is the body or the flesh of the animal that's representing the death. A death has to occur. And if you have the animal, the blood part is what is trying to be accessed. The death is sort of incidental to accessing the life. The life we know is in the blood. And we see a similar parallel. And in my teaching I do on salt, if you go to the website, again, that's fordiswritten.com, and you go to the radio and TV page, you'll be able to click on and listen to at least the radio version of my teaching on salt. And you'll see that the grain is also likened to bread or flesh. And these are all parallel metaphors. And those represent the death, the things that have to die. And the salt is totally representative of blood and can stand in the place of blood and has similar properties. And if you go into salt teaching, you'll see that more explicitly explained. But we know the salt and grain go together, and you had to have salt with every grain offering, and you had to have, just like you had an animal offering that had both elements of life and death represented, the flesh and the blood, so also in a grain offering you had to offer it with salt, because the salt provides the parallel, the life part of the offering. So you have the offering, the death side, the bread or the flesh or the grain, and then the salt that goes with it that represents life. And we see that in John 12:24, where it says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." And so we see the metaphors here paralleling this idea of a need for death. The Messiah had warned them that he was going to have to die, and the necessity for death. And if you do die, if that flesh, the grain in the sense of the wheat, or the flesh in the sense of the animal dies, then the blood, the life, can be accessed. And we had the salt with the grain there paralleling in the offering. And so the tabernacle is showing us this truth through these different avenues. Now, getting back to what we were looking at in our parallel between first and second, when we looked at the difference between the first and second tabernacles, we saw that the first tabernacle, there was sown a natural perishable body. And in chapter 10, when it culminated in the body of Messiah, and we had, you know, previously he'd made the parallels of the present age and the age to come with the holy place, the holy of holies. And then we had the first, you know, the priesthood that was in the present age that operated under Aaron, and the second priesthood of Melchizedek that operated in the age to come. And he made all these parallels. We see that it's culminating in chapter 10, where it's talking about being sown a natural perishable body, being raised a spiritual imperishable body. We see Paul make this specific example and reference in 1 Corinthians 15:42-46. So if you go reference that, 1 Corinthians 15:42-46, Paul's talking about this exact thing that the book of Hebrews is also mentioning, this idea of having your body sown naturally a perishable body and being raised spiritual imperishable body, and how that's playing in to how Messiah is able to enter in and be that high priest that the Aaronic priest could not be, and how we also will be a part of this Melchizedekian priesthood. But this is not to discount the role of the Aaronic priesthood, because the only way that the Aaronic priesthood could have an eternal covenant to be a priesthood is if Messiah can be of the line of the Melchizedekian priest, because he's got to make the way for those priests to not be dead so that they could forever serve, right? They can't forever serve under that covenant that was made with the priesthood of Aaron. They can't forever serve if they're dead. So it's sort of parallels, you know, Messiah's priesthood enables, you know, the other side, this other priesthood. But I think in some way, and I'm not sure because, you know, the Bible's not super clear on the role in the age to come, how the Aaronic priesthood would still have a part to play in their element of being priests in the different context of the Melchizedekian priesthood that we operate in today, in a priesthood, in a tabernacle, if you will, that's not made with human hands. So it's a different priesthood we're operating in the Melchizedekian sense than in the Aaronic. And we could get into more detail of that, but for purposes of time, I'm going to move on. We also can look at John 2, 19 through 21 and know, cross-reference that. And it says, what sign, when they said, what sign to show your authority to the Messiah? When they asked him about the sign, he said, destroy this temple, this tabernacle, if you will, this house, and in 3 days I will raise it up. And so when you start seeing how the book of Hebrews puts these metaphors together, and generally speaking, I mean, they're pretty natural metaphors to put together with the body and a house. We always think of, our body is a house or a tabernacle that's indwelling and has this spirit, the Holy Spirit, and so on and so forth. So these are not huge stretches to understand, but once you really tie them together in these powerful ways that the book of Hebrews does, it makes a whole lot more sense, and it really nails down some problems with certain translations, the modern translations, that try to justify their idea that the supposedly the Torah has been done away with, or the first covenant, we don't have to do that, and all that nonsense. I mean, the message is so powerful when it's just shown to be what it is, the truth, that those kind of ridiculous arguments are no longer valid in any sense or form. At least they can't go to the book of Hebrews and use that as their justification, because it's really shown to be as false as it is by really bringing the powerful message that the book of Hebrews actually brings concerning the Messiah, which for those that would want to share the message of Messiah with a religious Jewish person who has serious questions about this important topic, about why there's this different priesthood and what's the significance of that, and why does Messiah have to die, and why, how did that come together? I mean, the book of Hebrews really gives you a powerful way to explain why that was necessary and what's going on, better than anything. If we didn't have it, I just don't know how you would even go about doing that. So it's really an important book and really an important thing to understand. So looking at that uniqueness of the ninth, first, and second in chapter 10, where he says, he said, behold, I have come to do your will. He puts to death, or destroys, kills, takes away, whatever way you want to translate that, the first, okay, in order to establish the second. By this, and there's no covenant there now. Granted, in most translations, they actually don't put the referent there, because I think even they were like, well, maybe this really isn't, because they realize that it's referring to the body of Messiah finally. But they still use it as their excuse. They'll just one off that section of the verse and leave the rest off, and to justify their doctrines, their false doctrines. But what we're seeing here is that is talking about the first here in the neuter form, and we're going to see why that is significant. So the previous uses were used in the feminine form of first and second. Now this ninth used is used in the neuter form. Well, if you look at the biblical Greek illustrated by examples by Max Zerwick, and it's volume 114, it's an English edition from 1963, and if you go to page 47, it'll say, and let me explain first, when the emphasis is on quality, it says, it'll say this, when the emphasis is on quality, the neuter is used of persons, as also in Hebrews 7:7 and John 3:6. In other words, it gives two other examples that are going to parallel this use of the neuter form, and that when it does that and is talking and emphasizing quality, it's used of persons. Okay, so we know that this referent here of doing away with the first in order to establish the second is talking about a person. In Hebrews 7:7, it says, but without any dispute, the lesser is blessed by the greater. So we have within the book of Hebrews the first cross-referencing example that they give. And then in John 3:6, there's also another example. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the spirit is spirit. Okay, so it's, and both of those cases are talking about two different realms. He goes on to say in the Biblical Greek Illustrated, it says, thus the neuter here lays down the absolute and universal principle based on the distinction and separateness, each in its own sphere, of the natural and the supernatural orders. And we saw this, if you were with me in the last program, we saw this exact thing going on. The author of Hebrews is making this total parallel between the natural and the supernatural orders, between the seen and the unseen, between the holy place and the holy of holies that nobody could see, between the natural realm and the present age and the age to come, and the Aaronic priesthood versus the Melchizedekian. And it was this constant parallel between the natural and the supernatural orders. And so that was very evident throughout. And so when the author makes this significant, he's been using first and second eight previous times, he's been paralleling, making this exact example, and then all of a sudden he switches to a neuter here. He's laying down that absolute universal principle that it's between these two spheres, the natural and supernatural orders, in a very specific and powerful way, culminating in the body of Messiah. So this is a really powerful, interesting element to this whole idea of first and second. So we're not just, especially within the Hebraic roots, when we've, early on discovered, and Tim Hegg was one that I was pointed out to me that originally that first and second were, at least in the original, in the first couple, were discussing priesthood, but there wasn't a care, we didn't get into the more detail, and so I never, until I went through and did a detailed study of the book of Hebrews and worked through a commentary on it, until then that I discovered the different reference that were going on, and the Lord really just opened up this understanding and the scripture here to see how it was culminating in Messiah and why that was so significant. So I'm appreciative to Tim Hegg for pointing out the initial first being referencing the priesthood, but very excited where the Lord continued that journey and showing me how it's culminating in the body of Messiah and how that is working together. And I know that I believe Deanna Dye has some teachings where she talks about the number 9 and the significance of that. And so if you ferret out some of her teachings on 9, and just interesting that there are 9 first and second uses here, or at least for the first is really the emphasis that we're looking at, but second is secondary to it. But the first having 9 of those uses being used in such a powerful, significant way, I think is all the more important and significant in just the very high tech way that the author of Hebrews is going through this book and doing what he's doing. And so just to review, for those of you who weren't able to listen to the first teaching, what I'd like to go through, so if you have pen and paper and you're able to write it down, I'll give you the 9 instances, and you can go back and go ahead and look at these and analyze them for yourself. I highly recommend that you get there's one, if you can't afford to get a Logos software, highly recommend Logos. If you can afford it, get a mid-range package. It's right in the $500 to $600 range. Always make sure you go on and put Logos coupons and get the 15% off. They usually offer 15% off, so I recommend you take advantage of that always, and get a mid-level package, and then you can add books that you want as you go. I mean, they even offer the Talmuds and other things that you can do full detailed searches through those, that I think stuff like that is just invaluable, that you can actually, I know a lot of times someone will say, well, the rabbi says thus and thus, and well, how can I look that up? Unless you happen to have a whole lot of money and you can buy all the volumes of the Talmuds and everything else and then figure out how to look through them. And that's going to take you a lot of time, number one, a lot of money. But you can get all of that and do really high level detail searches in the click of a button. And so highly worth getting the Logos software. I really love it, and absolutely recommend getting the classes. Proctor is his name that does classes through it's associated with Logos, but not directly a part of Logos, but they're associated together. He does the classes, and they're a little bit pricey, a couple hundred dollars to take the class, but well worth every penny. If you're a studier, highly recommend getting that software. I mean, it adds so much to your ability to study and just cut down the time and looking things up. And you have so many great tools that are just really, really invaluable. So again, the nine references then are, the first one was an 8-7. And here we saw that there were faulty priests. And chapter 7 had prefaced that with the fact that there was these faulty priests. So the whole chapter 7 is leading up. So I read chapter 7 first, then go look at 8-7 and notice it's talking about faulty priests, finding fault with them in 8-8, but that's just a follow-on. So 8-7 is your first instance of the first and second. And then 8-13 is the aged again and dying priesthood. In 9-2, we have the first priesthood. Now, this one could be tabernacle, although, and it does have tabernacle. A few editors or scribes in a few manuscripts added in tabernacle, whereas the author, as I said in the previous lesson, only put first, so protos or protos. And he just put first, and he doesn't put the referent in all of these, except for, I think, one place where he adds covenant, and in the latter chapters, I think 9, one place he does add it, maybe to not confuse anyone and to make it clear, but the rest he puts nothing so that he can build the metaphors together and just catch your eye with this repeated word first and second. And so 9-1 there is first priesthood is most likely. Tabernacle could be, and this is because it cannot be at least covenant, we know. But either priesthood or tabernacle could be fine because it's talking about the present age and the first covenant in this particular instance in the context. So either one is fine for the point that the author is making. That's probably why there was a question. But if anyone were to try to say it was covenant, then that would be silly because covenants don't have holy places. But people, priesthoods, and tabernacles do. And so the context there bears that out. In the 9-2, we saw that tabernacle was the referent there for the first tabernacles. We're talking about the holy, it's talking about in contrasting the holy place to the Holy of Holies. Same with 9-6. So 9-2 and 9-6, that's 4 and 5, number 4 and 5 of the uses, are both talking about tabernacles and making this comparison between holy place and the Holy of Holies and beginning to tie in this age, this present age and age to come with the parallels from the priesthoods, that one in the that operates and is seen in the present age and one that operates and is not seen because it's dealing in the age to come. And then we have 9-8, which is number 6, and it's the first tabernacle, and it's representing the present age. Okay, so 9-8 is the first tabernacle. We had 9-2 and 9-6 were 4 and 5. Then number 6 is 9-8. Chapter 9, verse 8, first tabernacle. So that's representing that present age. That's where he, in 9-8, he comes in and gives us the symbols, what the symbols are about, and tells us this is what the Holy Spirit is saying in these symbols, in this parable of the tabernacle, if you will. And then 9-15 is the first covenant. This one is actually talking and referring to covenant, as well as 9-18. So 9-15, 9-18, those are 7 and 8. Those are talking about the first covenant. And so covenant is actually used. And finally, it's going to culminate in 10-9 in the body of Messiah, where we change, again, that he makes the change to the neuter, and it's talking about the body of Messiah, and it's the natural and versus the an imperishable contrast there. And so we're already out of time again. So I hope you'll visit me at foritiswritten.com for this and the first teaching. Again, foritiswritten.com, or go to my new blog, really excited about this, at greatcommissionathome.com. greatcommission@home.com. Thanks, and we will see you next time.